الصلاة والسلام عليك.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وأفضل الصلوات وأتم التسليمات على سيدنا محمد وآله وصحبه أجمعين. ثم أما بعد، we're reading from the text of the السالك إلى قراءة أقرب المسالك في مذهب الإمام مالك رضي الله عنه in the jurisprudence of the Maliki school. May Allah's salawat and pleasure be upon all of the ulama of that school and the other schools. And we have reached the section dealing with the mujibat al-ghusl wa fara'iduhu, fara'id al-ghusl wa sunan al-ghusl. So we had mentioned previously that there are two or three types of ritual ablution. Put one in a state of ritual purity, so as to be able to pray, to touch the pages of a mushaf, and to circumambulate the Kaaba, the walking Kaaba. And we have gone over al-wudu, which is the one that people generally have to do the most, probably several times daily. A more major type of ablution is required under certain conditions, what he describes here as mujibat. In other words, that which necessitates the purificatory bath or the ghusl. And we will describe the ghusl when we get to the section about its obligations and its recommended acts. But first he goes over the mujibat, those things that necessitate it. So we learned that in al-hadath al-asghar, or minor ritual impurity, things are going to be of three types. There's going to be ahdath, things in of themselves that would necessitate wudu, which is generally anything that exits from excrement or fluid from the rear or front private parts of both men and women. And also things that are asbab, things that may be causes to that, like deep sleep, like unconsciousness, or like a man touching his organ with his bare hands. And then we have things that don't fall in either category, like doubt, someone doubting whether they have wudu or did I do wudu after I did use the restroom or which order and so forth. So here we're going to go over those similar things that necessitate al-ghusl, but for the bath, as we said. So he says, rahimahullah, fi mujibat al-ghusli wa fara'idihi wa sunani, first chapter or subsection, mujibatuhu al-naqa'u min al-hayd wa al-nifas. So the first one that he mentions is purity from menstrual flow and postpartum bleeding or flow as well. So a woman is not required, nor is it valid for her to offer the ritual prayer while she is still on her monthly cycle, or if she's still in the period of postpartum bleeding after giving birth. And there's a separate section about that that's going to come up in a little bit. But here, what concerns us is that once that has ceased, and she has determined that her period is over, or she has determined that her postpartum bleeding is over, now she has to pray. And since she has to pray, she also has to be in a state of tahara. So it's not simply enough that there's a cessation of bleeding, but there also has to be a specific ghusl or purificatory bath. So once that is determined, then she can do the ghusl, and then she can pray after that. And obviously also fast as well, because fasting also is not prescribed for women who are in their menstrual cycle or postpartum bleeding. So that's the first one. Wal janaba. And janaba is a word to describe the state that one is in after having sexual relations. And there are two types, two major causes that will cause janaba. And he says, wa huwa naw'an. الأول علاج البالغ حشفته في قبل أو دبر ولو من ذكر أو بهيمة. The first type is penetration. So obviously penetration of the male. البالغ, right? Someone who's post-pubescent. حشفته, this means the glands, penis, or the head of the penis. So it doesn't have to be the whole organ, but just the front part. في قبل أو دبر. So the قبل is what would be the forward private area of the woman, or the vagina, أو دبرين, or the anus. ولو من ذكر أو بهيمة, even if it's another male or even an animal. Now, this is one of the things here where people, they might read something like this and they'll take it as, does that mean that those things are permissible? Bestiality or homosexuality? No. But if it does happen, in case it does happen for whatever reason, or happened previously, or someone became Muslim and whatever the reason might be, then if there was penetration of a woman, either from the front or the back, or of a man, obviously only from the back, or of an animal, then the ghusl becomes obligatory upon the person who is doing the penetrating. It also becomes obligatory on the one who is penetrated. So that would include the woman in most cases, or all cases, obviously, and not the animal. But if there was this homosexual act, then the man as well, even though it still remains to be prohibited or haram. That also doesn't mean that anal sex is allowed. There's a consensus amongst the ulama that anal sex in any form is prohibited. But if it does happen, then ghusl is required in order to resume praying or fast, or praying at least, for both man and woman. So that's the first type, which is penetration, in what we describe, of janaba, or sort of post-sexual relationship type of state. الثاني, the second type, خروج المني في النوم مطلقا أو اليقظة إذا خرج باللذة المعتادة ولو بحق لجرب أو هز دابة فتمادى ملتذا حتى أنزل وإلا فعليه غسل أثره والوضوء فقط. The second type is ejaculation, خروج المني, and here in this sense for either man or woman, while sleeping, mutlaqan. Mutlaqan means for whatever reason. So they woke up and they found, you know, wetness, and they determined that it was many, that it was sexual fluid or semen in terms of the man, or sexual fluid in terms of the woman. Then in this case, they would be required to do the ghusl. As opposed to al-yaqada, while awake, there's going to be some qualification to that. إِذَا خَرَجَ بِلَذَّةٍ مُعْتَادَةٍ, right? If it comes about as a result of orgasm. In other words, something that is associated with sexual pleasure. وَلَوْ بِحَقِّ لِجَرَبٍ أَوْ هَزِّ دَبَّةٍ فَتَمَادَ مُتَذَّنْ حَتَّى أَنْزَلْ. Even, for example, we can hear from a primary case of a man, if there was a type of an itch or a scab or something, and he wasn't intending to do that, but by rubbing the scab, it caused an ejaculation, then this is still what's called ladha mu'tada, or a normal course of orgasm. Then in this case, they would also have to do the ghusl. أَوْ هَزِّ دَابَّةٍ فَتَمَادَ مُنْتَثَّنَ. Or here he gives another example, that's kind of a pre-modern example, but nevertheless, someone's riding on their horse or their camel, and just the going back and forth, and there was a rubbing, and then that caused that to happen, then also that would require ghusl. وَإِلَّا فَعَلَيْهِ غَسْلُ أَثَرِي وَالْبُؤُ فَقَطْ. Otherwise, if it's not in that way, if it doesn't come out as a result of orgasm, but if someone, some of the examples they sometimes give, if someone is stung by a scorpion or prodded with an electric prod, obviously it's something not likely or probable, but just for argument's sake, and then there was an ejaculation that was not accompanied by an orgasm, there wasn't any pleasure in it, it was just sort of a, you know, a physical sort of shock to the system, and that happened, then this would not be considered necessary to do ghusl at that point. So he says, وَإِلَّا أَذَوَيْسْ فَعَلَيْهِ غَسْلُ أَثَرِهِ وَالْوُضُوءُ فَقَطْ. Otherwise, you would just wash the area, and you would only be required to do wudu in that case, and you would not have to do the ghusl. So that's in terms of the mujibat. I would also add to this, someone who is newly Muslim, it's better for them to do the ghusl, because most likely they would have had one of these if they're post-pubescent. Certainly a woman would have had that, and a man likely, if they had previous sexual relationships or if they had any sort of wet dream or orgasm, then they would have to do the ghusl in order to pray, even just after becoming Muslim. So those are the mujibat, briefly, that which necessitates. Then he moves on to the fara'id, the obligatory acts of the ghusl. And it's actually quite simple, and probably simpler than the wudu. So he says, فَرَائِدُهُ النِّيَّةِ. So the first is the intention. So in the Maliki school, acts of ritual purification are considered to be acts of worship as well. And that means that they must be accompanied by an intention, by a niyyah. And so the intention should be something like رَفْعَ الْحَدَثِ, to raise one out of the state of this hadath al-akbar, or this major state of impurity, or to doing an obligation, because now one is required to pray, that intention works too, or so that one can perform a fard. So if you need to perform some obligation and there's something that is in between to get to that obligation, namely to be in a state of purity, then that becomes an obligation as well. So the first thing is in niyyah, and this has to precede the beginning of the washing of the body. So if you had like wash your upper half and then you remember, oh wait a minute, I'm doing this, not just taking a bath, then you would have to repeat the part that you washed without intention. So in niyyah, the intention, وَتَعْمِيمُ ظَاهِرِ الْجَسَدِ بِالْمَاءِ. That means the outside, whatever is shown, the outer part of the body, all of it has to be covered with water. Water must reach every skin fold, every crevice, you know. And they say particularly that one should look for things like behind the knee, and you know, small up the back, and things where maybe not very easy to get to for some, but nevertheless, it's required for the ghusl. وَتَخْلِيلُ الشَّعْرِ وَأَصَابِعَ الرِّجْلَيْنِ. So this includes also, even if you have a heavy beard, remember how we talked about in wudu, if you have a heavy beard, then it's enough just to get the outside of it. That's not the case in ghusl. Ghusl, the water has to penetrate the skin. So for a man who has a heavy beard, then he has to do takhlil, which is to run his fingers through his beard like this to make sure that it's penetrating the skin. And the same holds true for the hair of the scalp. There has to be takhlil so that it penetrates and gets to the scalp, and it's not, we're not rinsing the hair, we're washing the hair. وَأَصَابِعَ الرِّجْلَيْنِ, and also in between the toes. Remember we said earlier in wudu, it's only recommended, it's not an obligation. But here in ghusl, it's going to be an obligation. So anything that's from the outside. And that includes also the same aspects of the face that we had discussed earlier. And then washing of the outer part of the ear. In wudu, we're just kind of rinsing. But you need to get the back of it and the outer part of it everywhere. As much as one can. I mean, one shouldn't be obsessive about it, much in the same way we don't try to be obsessive about the wudu. But to be aware that ta'meem ظهر الجسد, so a general washing of the whole outer part of the body. وَالدَّلْكُ وَلَوْ بِغَيْرِ يَدْ وَالْمُمُعْلَةِ. And just like in wudu, we have dalk, we have rubbing. As Imam Malik defined ghasl, washing, as including مِرَارْ الْيَدْ, you know, washing, you know, moving the arm back and forth. وَلَوْ بِغَيْرِ يَدْ. Even if you can't reach with your hand or your arm, you can use something. You can use a khirqa or a cloth, or you can use a sponge, or if you want to get the middle of your back and you have, you know, something attached to a stick to do that, that's all fine. And even another person can do that too. So it doesn't have to be you yourself, but a dalk has to be done for the entire body. Wal mu'alah. Mu'alah is continuation, just like we had in wudu. So if you only did like the upper half of your body, and then you went and left the bath shower to answer a phone call or something, and you came back at such a time that your body normally would have dried in normal conditions, then you would have to renew that again, because you cut off. Otherwise, if you come back still within time, then you can just start where you left off. That's what's called al-mu'ala, or continuity within it. Those are the fara'id. Those are the obligations. وَسُنَنُهُ, the recommended acts, غَسْلُ الْيَدَيْنِ إِلَى الْكَوْعَيْنِ. So washing the hands, beginning with until the wrists. وَالْمَضْمَضَ, rinsing the mouth, since the mouth is in the, you know, the inner part of the mouth is on the inside, it's not on the outside, it's not an obligation. وَالْإِسْتِنْشَاقُ وَالْإِسْتِنْثَارُ, which is blowing up the nostrils and back out. Again, that's inside, not outside, but the outer part of the nose, yes. وَمَسْحُ سِمَاخِ الْأُذُنَيْنِ, and also the inner part of the ear here. So the outer part is washing, but if you want to rinse the inside, then that is a sunnah, or a highly recommended act. And then the virtuous parts of it, as we said, are a little less degree than sunnah, but nonetheless virtuous to do anyway. Al-fada'il, at-tasmiyah, saying bismillah at the beginning, just like we have in wudu. Al-bad'u bi-izalati al-adha al-jasadi, thumma ghasl awrati, thumma adha' wudu'hi mu'akhiran rijlayhi li-faragh al-ghusl, wa taqdimu a'ali وميامنه وتثليث رأسي وقلة الماء بلا حد. So the fada'il is actually describing the way you would do it in the most meritorious way. In other words, the way the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and the order that he did it. So you begin with the tasmiyah. والبدء بإزالة الأذى عن الجسد. You begin by removing, if it's as a result of a cessation of menstrual postpartum bleeding or post-sexual relationships, then whatever fluid, blood or semen or whatever it is that you have on your body should be washed off first. That's what it means. إزالت الأذى. ثم غسل عورته. Right, and then washing the rear and the front private parts. ثم أعضاء وضوئه. Then, to perform the wudu like you normally would, except you would do each body limb, washing it only once, not three times. So you go about it, washing your hands, then you do madmada, istinshaq, istinthar, and then washing the face just once, then washing each arm just once, and then actually rinsing the hair just once, and then the ears, and then washing each foot just once. Some of them say to delay washing the feet until the end, especially if you're standing in a place that may not be tahir, it may have some najasa, right? If it's, and this happened a lot in the pre-modern era and in rural areas where you would have the kanif, or the kind of the place where people, you know, toilet, lack of a better word, in the same place as where the shower would be. So if there's some doubt about the area, then you wash the feet the last thing, because, you know, you're kind of touching the najasa if there's a fear of that. Otherwise, you can do the feet at the same time that you do your wudu. ثم أعضاء وضوئه مؤخرا رجليه لفرض الغسل, as we said, وتقديم أعالي وما يمينه. And there's two schools of thought about how to wash the body now in terms of order. One says that you do the right side completely, beginning with أعلى. This is what he means by أعالي. So, you know, right shoulder, back, collarbone, so forth, the pectoral, all the way down to the foot, the right side first. And then you go do the same with the left. That's one way of looking at it. Others said, no, the entire upper body first. So, till like the waist. Entire upper body first, back, shoulders, chest, and then the lower body, right, left. So either you're going like, 1, 2, 3, 4, or you're doing 1, 2, 3, 4. Either way is okay. وَقِلَّةِ وَتَثْلِيثُ رَأْسِهِ, and also washing the hair. Washing the hair, actually, he didn't say it here, but it should be done before you get to washing the body. So washing the hair three times, which includes hair of the beard. And then you do the body. وقلة الماء بلا حد, and also to use a paucity of water, not to use too much water. بلا حد, and without designating exactly how much water that is, people have different body sizes and so forth, but only use as much water as one needs, as one requires. And I would say even in the shower, you can get away with a little bit more than a trickle, and you'll still be able to do the ghusl. Sometimes people have a question, well, what about if I soap up, if I lather up first? That's fine, especially if the water is running from the shower head, because the water that's coming down and is getting to your body is mutlaq, right? It's unqualified water. However, be careful about using soapy one, which if you don't have access to a shower, sometimes the bath will be prepared. Like if you get in your bathtub, and you use soap, to make soap it up and bubbles and so forth, and you just immerse yourself and then you come out of it and say, well, I've had water cover all my body, I should be good. It's not good because the water has been changed. Remember when we talked about the properties of water? So certainly not the same color, and it's not going to taste the same, and it's not going to smell the same. So all three properties of the water have been changed because it's been mixed with the soap. So make sure, even if you're going to soap and lather up, that use the water that's used to clean you off is going to be met mutlak, right? It's going to be water that's coming directly from the shower head and not mixed with anything else. Allahu a'lam. As far as shampooing of the hair, same thing. However, I would prefer that people do it in the beginning, just washing the hair, getting the hair wet first, obviously before they shampoo it. And I don't think you can shampoo dry hair anyway. So you get the hair wet completely and do the three times, as well as the beard for men. And then you've done the part of the hair. You can add shampoo after that and wash it and so forth. وَتَمْنَعُ الْجَنَابَ, and janaba prevents, so it's not licit or lawful to do these things. Prayer, as-salah, wa-tawaf, wa-masil, wa-saf, as we said. So the ritual prayer, whether it's a sunnah prayer or obligatory prayer, as we mentioned before, tawaf around the Kaaba, whether it's part of an umrah, part of a hajj, or you're just doing it as entering into the haram, either way, it's considered to be like the prayer, so you need to be in a state of tahara. Wa masah al-mushaf, and not touching the pages of the mushaf, as we said. So the same three that go for the minor ritual impurity also go for the major ritual impurity. Wa yazid alayh, but in addition, dukhul al-masjid, entering the mosque. So both for one in a state of janaba and one in a state of menstrual bleeding or postpartum bleeding. Wa qira'at al-Qur'an, and also the recitation of Quran. However, that's only true for the janaba, for someone who is in the state of janaba after sexual relationship. The Maliki are actually the only madhab that I'm aware of that allows for someone, a woman obviously, who is in postpartum bleeding or in height, to recite from the Quran. And when Imam Malik was asked about this, he said, is she supposed to spend half her life not reading the Quran? Because the maximum period of menstrual bleeding is 2 weeks, 15 days in the Maliki school. So some women can have up to 15 days of bleeding. That's half of the month, half of your life. So he didn't imagine that a woman, half of her life, she wouldn't be allowed to recite from the Quran. And that's recitation, not touching the pages of the Mus'haf. Unless she is a teacher or a student, as we said before. So teacher and student have the dispensation, unless you're in a state of janaba, right? You're in a state of major ritual impurity as a result of sexual relationship, because it's seen that you have the ability to remove that state. A woman cannot remove her state of postpartum or menstrual bleeding until it actually stops. So even if she takes a shower while she's doing that, it's not going to have any effect. Whereas if one takes a shower after sexual relations, then one is no longer in that state of janaba. Wallahu a'lam. So,
but,
yes, and also entering the masjid is both for a haqid, someone who's in a state of ritual impure, for menstrual bleeding or postpartum bleeding, or in a state of janaba. However, this applies particularly to, number one, those places that are their original waqf or the original endowment was purely or solely for a masjid, not something else. And number two, it pertains to the prayer area. So like in some North American or Western masajid, you have a musalla prayer area, and then you have like multi-purpose room, and you have the hallway, you have other things. So that doesn't apply. So she can freely go to any of those places. And the only place that she has to avoid then would be the prayer area itself. And the same thing for someone who's in a state of janaba. And the first one that I said that has to be specifically as a mosque, because there are some places that were founded as schools. Our teachers consider, for example, Azhar in Cairo, that its original endowment was for, or the endowments that made Azhar what it is today, is because it's a place of learning and not specifically only as a mosque. So some of them consider that Ha'id, or someone in a state of bleeding to enter Al-Azhar Mosque without any issue, because it's not considered to be a mosque proper per se in terms of its endowment. Wallahu a'lam. So that concludes the section about that which necessitates purificatory bath and the way about doing it, the fara'id and the sunnah. The next section, faslun fil mashi ala al-khuffain, section about wiping on the socks. So khuf doesn't really mean sock, but it means foot covering. And we'll get to in a second what in the Maliki school, what particularly they mean by that. So he says, rahimahullah, rukhisa li rajulin wa imra'atin fi hadarin aw safar fi al-mashi ala al-khuffayn badalan min ghasl ar-rijlayn fi al-wudu'i bi 10 shurut. So rukhisa, this is an important word here, rukhisa. It has been given as a dispensation for a man or a woman, whether they are a resident or whether they are traveling, to wipe upon the foot covering, socks or shoes, we're going to get to in a second, badalan min ghasl ar-rijlayn, as a substitute or instead of washing the feet in their wudu, bi 10 shurut, but with 10 conditions. Sittatun fil khuf, so 6 concerning the actual sock itself. Wahiya kawnuhu jildan, number one it has to be leather, so that eliminates dress socks, pantyhose, those type of socks that Navy SEALs wear that are impenetrable by water. For the Maliki school, unfortunately, that doesn't fly with us. You have to have leather socks. Why? Because rukhisa, it's a dispensation. So the Sahaba didn't wear Navy SEAL socks, but they did wear something that was leather. So when we have a dispensation, the juristic principle in the Maliki school is you don't make qiyas on that. You don't make analogous reasoning. You don't say, well, they had leather and we have Navy SEAL socks and they both prohibit water from entering, so they're the same thing. No, they're not the same thing, because we're talking about a dispensation. So a dispensation has to be conforming to exactly to what the dispensation originally, how it was allowed during the time of the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So first it has to be leather, that's number one. Tahir, it has to be pure. That means that if you're going to wear a leather sock, technically by the rules of the madhab, it has to have come from an animal that was slaughtered properly. Because in the Maliki school, as we went over the section about najasat, if you buy very nice leather booties from Prada, but the animal didn't come from a slaughtered animal, right, came from Italy or came from wherever, then those shoes would not be proper for one to wipe upon, because the animal wasn't slaughtered. So it's not considered to be tahir. Yes, there's another opinion in the school, min al-mutakhirin, some of the later scholars of the school, and they said tanning, like the Shafi'is and the Hanafis, they say tanning, the process of tanning that leather goes through renders it pure or tahir. But if we go by the strictest interpretation of the Maliki school, even that's not going to work. So jild, tahir, leather, has to be pure. Makhruzan, right? Bil khabz, in other words, it can't be just like pieces of leather that you tie it up together. It has to be either using stitched up, or it has to be with fastened in a way that is not easily pulled apart, right? So you can't just like slap a couple pieces of leather and then tie it like a shoelace and then say that's a khuf. So it has to be, you know, something like I'm wearing here, like this, where it's kind of stitched or sewn and seamless like that and covers the foot. Satiran li mahall al fard, covering the part that is going to be the obligatory part to wash in the foot. So that means from the toes all the way to up into including the ankle. So if it was like this, below the ankle, that's not going to work. So it has to be this far, up into including the ankle. يمكن تتابع المشي فيه عادة بلا حائل. And also, that you can normally walk in them. And what they mean by normally walk in them means that it's snug enough that when you walk, your foot is not slipping out of it. You know, like if you wear shoes that are too big, then your whole heel kind of comes, you know, plopping out. And so it has to be, you know, it doesn't have to be skin tight. Like these are not skin tight, but it has to be snug enough so that when I walk in them, my foot is not slipping in and out of it. That's what it means to tab on mesh. So it has to be the right size, basically. Adatan, yeah, normally speaking. So those are the six in terms of the leather of the sock. One, it has to be leather, has to be pure, coming from a pure animal, not just tanned, tanning process. Has to be sewn or stitched, that's three. Has to cover the toes to the ankle, that's four. Has to be able to, one, able to walk in them normally, that's five. And then six here, bila ha'il. Ha'il means that there shouldn't be stuff on top of the leather sock itself, right? Like something that would prevent normally of you wiping on top of it. So like crazy glue or something. Spill, you know, or something fell on it, like, or it got stuck to it, and so the leather is not there, exposed. Then that's a type of hat. Just like in wudu, you know, when you're washing your arm, and you want to make sure that the skin is exposed. So those are the six in the khuf. وَأَرْبَعَةٌ فِي الْمَاسِحِ, and four in the person who's doing the wiping. In other words, the worshipper. وَهِيَ, number one, أن يلبسه بعد كمال طهارة مائية. The first is that you have to put them on after you've done a complete wudu. Not tayammum. He says tahara ma'iyya. So either right after wudu or right after ghusl. Not after tayammum. And that means you have to have completed the wudu. Let's say you are doing your wudu and you just finished your right foot, and then you put your right khuf, your right leather sock on. And then you wash your left foot, and then you put your left leather sock on. Is that valid? No. You need to complete it completely. So you wash the right foot, you wash the left foot, you're done. Now you can put on your socks. Assuming you didn't lose your wudu in the 3 seconds by the time that you put it on. So in order for you to be able to wipe over them. So kamal, ba'da kamali taharatin ma'iyya. So either right after ghusl or right after wudu. Walla yakuna mutaraffihan bilubsi. And also, this one kind of a little bit more difficult to explain, that the intention behind wearing them. That it's not rafahiyah, mutaraffihan. You know, it's not, yani if you're just wearing them just so that we like the way they look, or so that you avoid making wudu on your foot solely for that purpose. Or that you, what else could I think of? Yeah, they said not including a mansarafahiyah is if you're cold and you're wearing socks and a leather socks, that's okay. If you wear them at night because you don't want to get bit by mosquitoes or scorpion or something like that, that's okay too. But it should be something that's kind of more of a normal thing that you're wearing them, and you're not specifically just trying to seek a rukhsa and trying to get out of washing your foot when you have the opportunity to do so. Wala asiyan ka muhrim. And also, you should be wearing them and not violating another Islamic principle while you're doing it. Another obligation. So the muhrim, in other words, one who's in Hajj or Umrah is not allowed to wear anything that covers the ankle. Men, that is. I'm not talking about women, but men. And so if they're wearing this type of leather boot or leather socks and then they go wipe on it, it's not valid because they're not supposed to be wearing that to begin with. So la asiyan. So they shouldn't be asi. They shouldn't be violating another Islamic principle by wearing them, such as someone who is in a state of ihram. وَلَا حَدْ لِأَمَدِي لِبْسِهِ وَيُنْدَبُ نَزْعُهُ لِكُلِّ جُمْعَةِ. And there is no particular time limit of how long you can keep wearing them, unlike the other three schools. So the Maliki school said, technically, to perpetually you can wear them, and as long as you remain in that state of wudu, obviously, and you don't lose the ability to wipe on your khuf, as we'll see in the next section. However, we end up nazaru li kulli juma. It's recommended to take them off every Friday, because Friday at least you're supposed to do ghusl as well, and you can't do ghusl when you have your socks on. ويبطلوا, and it is nullified. In other words, wiping on the leather socks is no longer valid. When is it nullified? ويبطلوا بموجب غسل. Number one, if you do something that would require you to make ghusl. So what we just covered in the last section, menstrual bleeding, postpartum bleeding, sexual relationships, all of that, at that point, you can no longer wipe on your leather socks because you have to make the ghusl. So it's not valid. وَبِتَخَرُّقِهِ قَدْرَ ثُلُثِ الْقَدَمِ وَإِنْ انْضَمْ وَبِالْقَلِيلِ لَا جِدًّا إِنْ انْفَتَحْ. Also, if it gets torn, the khuf, قَدْرَ ثُلُثِ الْقَدَمِ, for a third of the foot or more. Right, so like I get like a tear here, and like a third of my foot or more is exposed, right? وَإِنْ انْضَمْ, right? Even if I try to bring it back. So like it could be a tear, right? And it's a tear all along, like say the upper part, that's more than a third. It's opened up. At that point, even if it didn't open up, but it's just the tear all the way through from the top or from the side, then I can no longer wipe on it. I have to take it off and I have to make ghusl. That's what it means by وَإِنْ انْضَمْ, even if it's not opened. وَبِالْقَلِيلِ لَا جِدًّا إِنْ انْفَتَحْ. And, however, if it rips, but then it's exposed, the foot is exposed, so not just the tear, right? And it opens up, then it doesn't require a third, it could be less than a third. He said لَا جِدًّا إِنْ انْفَتَحْ. جِدًّا means like a very small tear. You know, maybe like something the side of your pinky nail or something. But anything bigger than that, and it's opened up so that the foot is exposed, then you can no longer make wiping on the foot, if that happens. وَبِإِخْرَاجِ رِجْلَيْهِ أَوْ أَحَدِهِمَا وَلَوْ إِلَى مَحَلِ السَّاقَ. And also by taking them off, or any one of them. Taking off here doesn't mean it has to be completely off. But if the heel reaches, like here, if the heel reaches the saq, which is this part, so my heel, and let's just say I have to open it actually, and then my heel comes like that, so it's out of the bottom part, and my heel came up over here, then it's like I took them off. And then at that point, I would have to take them off and make wudu or ghusl on the foot itself. وَكَيْفَيَةُ الْمَسْحِ. As for how do you wipe, he describes it here. And يَضَعُ يَدَهُ الْيُمْنَى عَلَى طَرَفِ الْأَصَابِعَ مِنْ أَعْلَى وَالْيُسْرَى عَلَى مِنْ أَسْفَلَ وَيُمَرُّهُمَا لِلْكَعْبَيْنِ. So basically, you're going to have, it's wiping, it's not washing. So we're not taking cups of water and getting our hoof wet. But much in the same way that your hands are a little bit wet when you wipe your hair or your ears, same with the hoof. And the sunnah is to start from the top here and then go one foot at the top, one at the bottom, and go all the way until the ankle, or a little bit beyond the ankle. So just like that. This part is obligatory, the top. The bottom part is recommended to the degree that if you forget to do it and you pray like that, then it's recommended you do redo the prayer in the time period. So you go back and wipe it again with both hands, and then redo the prayer within the time period. But in terms of what's obligatory, the top. سيدنا علي very famously he said لو كان الدين بالعقل لكان المسح على الخف من أسفل أولى من الأعلى. If religion was just by what we can reason about it, purely reason, then it would make more sense to wipe the bottom than to wipe the top. Because the bottom is the one that's beating the ground. Ostensibly, that's the one that may be getting dirty. But it's not just by what we can rationalize out of it. Yeah, and he just brings it up. وَتَبْطُلُ الصَّلَاةِ بِتَرْكِ الْأَعْلَى. So the prayer would be invalid if he didn't wipe the top. وَيُعِيدُ فِي الْوَقْتِ إِنْ تَرَكَ الْأَسْفَلِ. And you repeat within the prayer time if you neglected to do the bottom. وَيُكْرَهُ. And it's disliked. غَسْلُهُ. Washing it. Because we're not supposed to wipe it. وَتَتَبَّعْ وُضُونِهِ. وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَى. And also, we're just rinsing. You don't have to get in, you know, see how like there's creases here and crevices, and you don't have to like get in between those things. Just a simple like this. One shot. And the next section is tayammum, which is kind of something different. So we're going to stop here, inshallah, for this session. Allahu ta'ala a'la wa a'lam. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa salatu wa salam ala sayyidina al-mursaleen wa ala sahbihi ajma'in. Subhanallahi wa bihamdihi. Rabbil izzati amma yasifoon. والسلام على رسول الله الحمد لله رب العالمين
يا رسول الله.